On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to answer these questions. Is this peak Luka? And does this version of Luka Doncic mean that the Lakers are a top title contender? Also, what about the Minnesota Timberwolves joining the Eastern Conference and the Supersonics are back? Yes, we're going to talk expansion. All this and more coming up right now. Welcome to The Big Number. I am Tom Haverstrom. We do this every Wednesday here at Yahoo Sports. We've got our man, your man, Dan Devine. Dan, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm maybe not doing quite as well as a dude who we openly questioned on our podcast a couple weeks ago. Some idiot over here was like, hey, do we have any concerns about Luka Doncic's legs? And he has since used those legs to kick me in the teeth repeatedly. So, Tom, I'm really excited to get into it. What's this week's big number?
This week's big number, Dan, is 37.8. That is Luka Doncic's scoring average over his last six games. It is also how many times per game he is kicking you right in the teeth, 37 times. And it's been awesome to watch Luka's kind of resurgence. Even after that game in which he kind of shied away from that last second shot and handed that grenade over to LeBron, he's been on a tear. And maybe we can say, Dan, we kicked him into gear, right? Is that we inspired him to get his legs underneath him and get better in shape so that he could be this week's big number, highlighting how awesome he has been as of late. That 37.8, Dan, is the largest scoring average over a six-game span for a Lakers player in over a decade. The last time that we had seen a player do this kind of scoring binge, is Kobe Bryant back in 2012. So LeBron hasn't done it. Anthony Davis hasn't done it. And even Robert Sacre had not done it. So, you know,
I know.
I thought you'd be surprised by that. And I'm glad I got that reaction from you. But think about all the Lakers greats that have come through. And they haven't done what Luka Doncic is doing right now with 37.8 points over his last six games. Since that Denver loss, he's averaging 37.8 points, 9.2 rebounds, 7.7 assists, 2.2 steals, 1.2 blocks, while shooting 58% on twos, 40% on threes, and 82% on free throws, or as I like to call it, ones. Dan, take your bow. We did this. We got Luka Doncic because of what we said here at The Big Number on Yahoo Sports. He was like, you know what? I do have to take that last second shot. You know what? I do have to get in better shape. And here he is. I think we're like pretty close to peak Luka right now. So congratulations. You have that kind of influence over one of the best players in the world.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when in doubt, look for a hater and loser to stick it to. And, you know, here I am. Haters and losers don't come much bigger than your boy right over here. Yeah, I mean, listen, it's pretty hard to throw any kind of slings and arrows at somebody who's averaging like 38, 9, and 8 over the last half dozen games, 6-30 true shooting, while also, as you mentioned, creating turnovers, getting deflections, being where he's supposed to be in the defensive shifts, like, and they're winning the games. Like, that's a pretty bulletproof resume. So, you know, hats off to him. And then like the timeliness of it too, is that the Lakers for most of the year, it was all, they can't really win against good opponents, right? They're beaten up on the sub 500 teams, the lottery teams, the play-in teams, and they have yet to really put together significant wins against teams of consequence, the kind of teams that they might see come the playoffs. And just in this span, we've seen them take down the Knicks, take down the Nuggets, take down the Timberwolves, finishing off a season sweep, I believe, of the Timberwolves, a team that that beat them in the first round of last year's playoffs. And so you're starting to get this sense of, okay, we had questions about, and I wrote about this last week, I believe, at Yahoo Sports, but the kind of tale of two teams with these Lakers of, you know, yeah, they have this like great, you know, the record is great and the offense can look great and Luka's an MVP candidate, but the underlying metrics lead you to believe they're more of like an average team and they haven't really beaten anybody. Well, they just kind of keep checking off boxes on those things. They're now, over the last 2 months, they're a top 10 defense. Over the last 2 months, they are a near top five offense. and they're getting kind of the best versions of the guys that they need to have in working order by the time the playoffs comes around. Nobody bigger in that vein than Luka Doncic, who, as you said, this is looking like maybe the best version of him that we've seen.
Yeah, that's pretty scary, isn't it? You know, they get Luka and he comes over in the trade. And it seems like, man, this is kind of unfair that you get Luka Doncic in a Lakers uniform just as LeBron is sunsetting his career. Now they actually seem to be having great chemistry and Luka looks fantastic. When you look at the numbers over at dunksandthrees.com, estimated plus minus, which attempts to quantify a player's impact on both ends of the floor, using a very fancy advanced analytics to look at your on-court, off-court numbers or your team numbers when you're on the floor versus off the floor and your box score numbers, put it all together. And according to estimated plus minus, this is the best version of Luka Doncic we have ever seen. Even better than the one that took the Mavs to the NBA Finals. Even better than rookie, second-year bubble Luka Doncic. This is the best that we've seen him. And he's at plus 7.5 points every 100 possessions of impact when he's on the floor right now for dunksandthrees.com's metric. And that's number one. It's never been higher. And a big reason why is because his defense has picked up as of late. I couldn't believe it when I saw it, when I was checking in on the numbers here, is that he's 86th percentile in estimated plus minus going for a predictive measure of his defensive impact at plus one, meaning he's better than average on that end of the floor. And you can't really argue with the box score stats. He's been more active, making more disruptions defensively. And it just seems like, Dan, whatever seemed to be plaguing him or whatever seemed to be keeping him on the officials, not getting back on defense, not really giving himself on that end of the floor as much, as of late, I don't feel like we have a leg to stand on to get on Luka Doncic for his defensive shortcomings. In fact, I think he's been a plus on that end of the floor as of late, and I hope he sustains that, because that means the Lakers, I think, go from just being a really cool story with LeBron, AR, and Luka out there. And now it's like, oh, wait, if things break their way, could they actually come out of the West this season? I think now the door has opened.
Yeah, it's when you've seen, especially we know what Luka Doncic is as a like playoff riser, right? Somebody who, you know, throughout the long arc of NBA history, we're familiar with stars, even the best players, very many of them, like their impact or their efficiency or their effectiveness, their production dips a little bit in the playoffs just because you're playing against the best opponents, right? Like it's the toughest road to walk. And so everybody's numbers drop a little bit. And Luka is one of those rare players where that doesn't tend to be the case, where he's actually still going to keep up both the volume and the efficiency and the shot creation for others and all those sorts of things. So you get into a playoff series where you feel like you've got a good shot at having the best player, or you could at least make the argument in pretty much every matchup you walk into. You've got one of the best problem solvers and creators in the NBA, somebody who has seen every defense that's going to be thrown at him. Obviously, LeBron James qualifies in that in that category as well, many times over. You've got multiple creators. You've got now, you're starting to develop that secondary complementary core around them, where you've got Marcus Smart playing at as high a level as he has since what his last year in Boston. He's been a real impact player for them. Our guy Kelly Eco wrote a really good story a couple weeks ago about the impact that Smart has had, especially on the defensive end, in short, that uptick that we've seen from the Lakers recently. You know, you've got DeAndre Ayton, the much discussed and often derided DeAndre Ayton, you know, saying, I think it was to Dan Wojcicki over at The Athletic, that, you know, he's kind of come around on the idea, like, yeah, maybe I don't believe I'm Clint Capella, but this is the role I've got to play on this team. This effort, you know, hard screen, hard dive, energy and effort on defense, and, you know, try to clear the glass. Like, that's the job I have to play on this team. And if he's able to do that and stick to that program, he becomes a pretty impactful player for them. You know, you're getting good minutes from Jared Vanderbilt when he's in there. You've got like length and athleticism there. You know, Jake LaRavia is somebody that can, again, be a, you know, handsy defender and someone who's a big, you know, good size for his position. You're just sort of like pairing away bad minutes and getting players who fit into what JJ Redick would like to do, all of whom, just about all of whom recently at least, are knocking down threes. And then so you put that around Luka, and then you have a secondary creator in Austin Reeves, and by the way, LeBron James there to kind of plug in the other holes. Like, that's the recipe for a team that can be awfully malleable and dangerous and interesting in a playoff series. I think the hope now, though, is, as you mentioned, Are we seeing peak Luka Doncic? You just hope that you're not seeing the peak a month too early. But if the Lakers are able to sustain what they're doing right now, and that starts with Luka, yeah, they become a pretty dangerous team and a pretty interesting one in just about any matchup they'd face in the West.
Dude, he just looks so good against Houston. They got another game on against Houston on Wednesday night, and then they have a back-to-back against Miami, against Bam Adebayo, who just scored 83 points. And so Luka, it feels like to me Luka could challenge that for the rest of the season. He's already done 73 before, and the way he's looking now, maybe there's just too many mouths to feed when it comes to Austin Reeves and Luke, and LeBron on the floor for him to go for 83. But like, man, that's going to be a fun matchup on Thursday night. Hopefully Bam Adebayo, who's been out with a calf tightness injury in Charlotte on Tuesday night, did not play, but hopefully he's back in action against the Lakers on Thursday. That'd be really fun. But Luka, yeah, these stats here: first in points in March, seventh in rebounds, fifth assists, and then third in steals, which is the thing that, look, steals can be a misleading metric. You can gamble on those. You can also not play good team defense. You could be you can be not necessarily in the right positions, and you can be hid defensively. And certainly Luka Doncic historically has been hid a bunch in his NBA career, but when he's active and when he's locked in defensively, not jawing at the officials, all that stuff, Luka is as big as you're going to get as a wing guy and as strong. And he's got the basketball IQ to do it. So it's just a matter of locking in on that end and feeling like he can do the things offensively while still being able to deliver defensively. So the bag that he had against Houston, and just in general, everything was going for him. It was drives to the cup. It was step back, off-legged, post-up moves. It was step back threes. It was in transition. It was everything you want to see. The passing, getting his teammates involved. I think it's helped having Luke Kennard out there. And although he's kind of cooled down as of late, we know the recipe for success around Luka Doncic. It's 3-and-D guys. And sometimes you can't get all the way on the both categories, but Luke Kennard is as good of a catch and shoot, you know, marksman as you'll find in the league. And it's a great pickup by the Lakers. And then Marcus Smart, we got to say it. We'll drill down deeper on this later in the show. But Marcus Smart, when he's on the floor with LeBron James, AR, and Luka Doncic, their net rating, the big three with Marcus Smart this season, is plus 12 every 100 possessions, meaning the Lakers with Marcus Smart and their big three outscoring opponents by 12 points every 100 possessions with great defense. And Marcus Smart, when he's healthy, when he's feeling fresh, when he's locked in on that side of the floor, he's a great perimeter defender and can guard 1 through 5 in a pinch. And so that's great for them that he's playing this well and he's shooting well and he's doing something that this team needs, 3-and-D. Luke Kennard, a lot of the three, not much of the D, but this is what you want from Luka Doncic and LeBron James and Austin Reeves, guys who can fill those roles at a high level. And so they're doing that. And Dan, I think just talking about LeBron real quick about this, he's had three straight games with his usage rate under 25. You rarely see that, meaning when he's on the floor, he's using less than a quarter of his team's possessions to score or try to score. That's in turnovers included. That's not his normal range. Usually he's in 25, 30, 35% of his team possessions, but it's almost like they kind of figured things out that Luka is going to be the guy. And after that weird thing that happened against Orlando in the last second of the game, maybe they just had a talk and just realized, like, maybe LeBron just went, he said it in the post game comments, was like, hey, I thought he had a really open look, but he decided to, you know, hand it off to me. Maybe they just had this conversation like, hey, if we're going to get to where we want to go this season, win a championship, Luka, you're the guy. It's your team. And I'm just going to sit back and do a lot of the role-playing stuff that I can do at a high level. I'll be a star in my role. And so far, he's not Joel Anthony out there. LeBron is not Joel Anthony out there just, you know, sitting back and playing crazy defense and that's it. He's still really good. But Dan, I almost feel like LeBron kind of stepping back, at least offensively, is helping kind of everyone understand their roles. I remember back in the day, the Theo Epstein with the Boston Red Sox said, hey, we're going to go closer by committee. And it was this grand idea that everyone would just, you know, hey, we'll play. You'll be the closer this game. You'll be the closer and you'll be the reliever. and everyone hated it. And in theory, closure by committee sounds great, but sometimes you like to know your role, and it helps to have kind of that order of operations in place so that there's no confusion out there. And I kind of feel like the Lakers have figured this out, that this is Luka Doncic in his alpha mode, A1 status on this team. And I think they're better off for it with LeBron at this stage. And Austin Reeves might be able to do that on another team. But on this one, for them to reach the highest heights, I feel like LeBron and AR have to kind of understand that this is Luka's team and he is the best player on the floor just about every night in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about it that clarifying roles and responsibilities is something that's critical for a team to have in place before they get to the playoffs, right? Like, you don't want to still be answering questions about what's our identity, where's our bread buttered, what are we trying to get to on a possession-by-possession basis by this time of the year. You kind of want to have those things buttoned up as you try to go for something more serious. Just one quick thing, because I feel like it's worth just drilling into a little bit. Like, you talked about steals and like Luka getting steals and why that's valuable. Just like on a very basic level, just think, like, let's, for our audience here, let's like think through it. A steal ends an opponent's possession. Like, they don't get a shot on goal. That's really important. It also gets you out. It's a live ball turnover. It gets you out in transition. And the efficiency of a transition off possession on offense is way better than your typical half-court possession. To wit, according to our friends at impredictable.com, the Lakers, they're after a made shot, they're averaging 1.14 points per possession this season, which is good. Not great, but good. After a turnover, they're averaging 1.29 points per possession. Mm. So a dramatic leap in points per possession there. And like, not that, you know, obviously everybody would, you know, we talk about the Thunder being one of the greatest defenses we've ever seen. A big part of that is the pressure they put on you to turn you over generates, like, necessarily generates much better looks at the basket against a backtracking defense, against no defender. You know, it gets you more open opportunities, more odd man rushes. And so like, if Luka can be part of a defense that creates more turnovers, that is generally going to, it's a virtuous cycle. It leads to better offense, which is where the Lakers are going to be, you know, hanging their hat no matter what. In terms of the LeBron, Reeves, Luka sort of timeshare and responsibility split, I've got a couple numbers on that later that I'm excited to get to. I think that the one downside, if I want to present my teeth for future kicking, is the concern that I've had that I think a number of people have had going back to, not just with Luka, but going back to the James Harden Rocket teams, to the Russell Westbrook Thunder teams. It's just, when you do go so heavily into one person as the ball dominator, as the highest usage player, the heavy creator, Jalen Brunson's Knicks teams have come under fire for this in recent years, to use a more current example. It's just, at what point does the mega usage become a little too heavy for it to be a sustainable answer come the playoffs? And to that point, yes, Luka's been on an absolute heater and the Lakers have been absolutely sensational. Over the last 2 months, 36% usage rate, 7.1 minutes of possession for Luka Doncic in terms of average time of possession per game. Over the last 10 games, it's up to 36.2% and 7.4 minutes. And during this heater, these last six games that you mentioned, 38.3% usage rate, 8.1 minutes of possession. And Luka can do that, right? We've seen this before. We saw it in Dallas. He can shoulder that kind of workload. He's an absolute horse who can handle that and still be efficient. Like, to do that and then still be putting up like a 630 true shooting percentage, it's bonkers, right? However, doing that for six games is one thing. Doing that for 2 months is another. And doing that through April, May, and then hopefully into June against the kind of defenses the Lakers are going to see is a very different ball game. So it's just, I think the thing to the, you know, glass half empty look potentially, or the thing to be aware of is, if that becomes too much, if the defenses that they're dealing with are like, we are burning the boats and giving you nowhere else to go, it's you and that's it. What's plan B? Because if at a long enough timeline, even men's health cover, the best shape of his life, Luka is going to feel the burden of that. And so where do you go if that becomes too daunting for him to shoulder? But for right now, it is not too daunting for him to shoulder. And the Lakers have looked more like a title contender of late than they had for the bulk of the season. And that's pretty exciting as we get into springtime.
9-10 over their last 10 games. Or sorry, I'm going to restate that. 9-1 over their last 10 games. They're Look, the Spurs and OKC, I have them above the Lakers in the title tiers. I have them along with a couple teams in the East with Cleveland and Boston. I'm not quite there putting the Lakers as the four-star contender beneath them. But if they do this again against the Houston Rockets, that defensively, the Rockets couldn't do anything against that Lakers defense. And part of that was the scheme against Kevin Durant and just doubling him and making someone else make a play. But they've done this against the Knicks and the Timberwolves recently, as the Lakers defense has been outstanding of late. And that's kind of the swing factor for the Lakers. We know they can score. They got Austin Reeves, who's as good of a creator as you'll find in the league, next to Luka Doncic. And then they got LeBron. It's the defensive end that they've really come on strong here. And so, yeah, they're 7.5 games back of the Spurs in the standings, and they're separating themselves with the Houston Rockets and could further separate themselves with the Rockets on Wednesday night. So this is a strong surge for the Lakers, and we're going to drill down even more here after the break. But Dan, it just seems like if these three, the big three for the Lakers, are kind of slotted into their roles and understand what they need to bring every single night, that's 75% of the way there for the Lakers. Because then Marcus Smart and Vando and Kennard and Rui, they can all kind of fill in behind them with a lot more clarity of their roles. And so hopefully Luka, men's health Luka, skinny Luka, can sustain this a little bit longer for a deep playoff run. But the Lakers look great. And we're going to explain a little bit more about just how good Luka has been and the team around him over the last few weeks. So we'll do that coming up right after the break. .38. That is this week's big number. That is a very high scoring average for Luka Doncic over his last six games. Lakers are 9-1 over the last 10, and now are the sole owners of the number three slot in the Western Conference. How are they doing it? Well, Dan, you've got three little numbers to help us explain what's going on with the Lakers behind the surge. What's your first little number?
First little number this week is 13.7. That's how many three-point attempts per game Luka has been launching during this six-game winning streak. For the season, he's up over 10 a game. He's second only to Stephen Curry in three-point attempts per game. And because Steph has missed so much time, Luka's like technically the league leader there. Per 100 possession basis for the season, 14.4 three-point attempts for Luka. The kind of people that have reached that previously: Steph, Clay, James Harden, Damian Lillard, and then like your DH specialist types, guys like Duncan Robinson and Malik Beasley and Buddy Hield. So Luka is launching him up at an historically heavy pace. You zoom out to the last 10 games, not just the six-game winning streak. He has taken exactly as many threes as twos, 118 of each. Zoom out to the last 2 months, which is kind of when the Lakers have really, according to JJ Redick, he kind of points to that mid-January point is when they've really ticked up on both ends of the ball. He has taken more threes than twos, 266 threes, 265 twos, and he's shooting 40% from deep on all that volume. During that span, the Lakers are just south of a top five offense. So like, you look at the splits in wins and losses, it's not always this simple, but it's notable. Mm-hmm. In Lakers wins, 11.3 three-point attempts per game for Luka, and he's shooting 37%. In losses, 9.3 and shooting 34.1%. So, we've talked before about how some of those under the hood indicators, declining drives per game, declining frequency of shots at the rim, stuff like that, suggest that, maybe Luka's a little bit too more perimeter oriented than you might like. However, at the risk of oversimplifying things, if he's making them, if he's taking more of them than ever, and he's making more of them than ever, kind of makes this Lakers offense awfully tough to deal with, no?
Yeah, that's astute thinking right there. When we're talking about the three-pointer, it feels weird saying this, but reminder, it's 50% more than twos. And so when you're shooting 39%, which is what he's doing in the month of March, it's the equivalent of shooting 59% on twos, which no one would complain about, right? If he was shooting 59% on twos, shooting 14 of them per game, you'd be like, great, that's great efficiency. Well, that's what it is for him. In the month of March, he's taken 110 three-pointers, And that's more than the next two Lakers players combined. And I remind you, Austin Reeves plays on this team and has played in each of those nine games. And he has Austin Reeves has taken 58. Marcus Smart has taken 49. You add those two together and you get 107. Luka Doncic has 110. That's nuts. It's crazy. Yeah. So when you have the guy, you're like, oh, they need shooters around Luka Doncic to thrive. What if your best three-point shooter is Luka Doncic, who's taking 13 of them per game? That's nuts. So if, again, the ebbs and flows of the season, he will go through a shooting slump at some point. But that is the biggest reason why Luka Doncic has been so good recently is because he's got the three ball working. And when that happens, man, everything kind of falls into place. So Dan, that is some extremely high numbers. And I think when you're shooting that well, it should be in that range of 12 to 15 per game.
Yeah. And when you're trying to get to that volume, it's important also to diversify it a little bit. And like Luke is never going to be a primary off-ball player. As we've talked about also, just like the idea of stratifying your roles, clarifying, like the best version of the Lakers is the one with Luka Doncic having the ball in his hand. However, with the volume going up, he's also taking about three catch and shoot threes a game during this recent stretch, and he's knocking down almost half of those. So I think he's like 15 for 31 or 15 for 32 on catch and shoots over these last 10 games. So if you can get him up to three or four catch and shoots in addition to the setbacks that he's taking, the pull-ups, then all of a sudden it's just like you get maximizing Reeves, you're getting him a little bit of a breather off the ball. Like there's just a lot of ways to attack. And again, the more ways that Luka Doncic has to attack, the better that overall LA offense is going to be. But let's go to the second little number and shift to the other side of things. We mentioned it earlier. Second little number this week is 10. That is where the Lakers rank in defensive efficiency over the last 2 months, according to Cleaning the Glass. Since January 18th, the Los Angeles Lakers have allowed 112.7 points per 100 possessions outside of garbage time. Through the first 40 games of the season, it was 119.1. Ooh. So that is a dramatic change around the midpoint of the season. And you can point to different reasons for that. The optimist can point towards things like Marcus Smart's impact, like we discussed earlier, or the uptick in steals and blocks. They're about four from just over eight steals and four blocks a game in that first half of the season to 8.6 and 4.5 per game since the last couple of months. So like, again, uptick in those disruptive plays that end a possession and, you know, get you outgoing. Increased willingness to lean on their zone. For the last 2 months, they've been more than 10 possessions per game in that sort of funky matchup zone, the hybrid zone that they play. And that would be among the leaders in zone possessions per game over the course of the season, according to our friends at Synergy. And just like, they're big, right? Like they don't play a whole lot of small guys. Even their weaker defenders, guys like Austin Reeves or Luka or Luke Kennard, that's like 6'5", 6'6". Those are like not small guys. So you're big, you have some schematic advantages, you're disrupting possessions. Like there's good stuff to be viewed all the way around there. There's also a pessimistic line on this though.
Yeah.
Do you want to go for it or you want me to? Ahead.
No, you go. I want to hear what you got.
All right. The pessimistic case here is before January 18th, the Lakers' opponents were shooting 37.4% from three-point range. Since January 18th, they're shooting 33% from three-point range. So that goes from the fifth highest three-point rate against to the third lowest three-point rate against. So as with all these things, it's a case of, do you see a glass half full or a glass half empty? Is this a real top 10 defense, Tom, or is this a defense that is benefiting an awful lot from some fortunate three-point luck over the last 2 months?
Yeah, in the month of March, they're allowing 30.4% from downtown, which
there
is the lowest in the NBA. So, this is kind of the big elephant in the room is whenever we're talking about good defense over a small sample size, you have to always check that opponent three-point field goal percentage because that is not as sustainable as we think. Statistically, there's been a bunch of studies that show that we don't simply have much control over whether that shot goes in as much as we'd like to think so. That is a lot more variant than we think. So you can control somewhat how many threes your opponent takes, but whether it goes in or not is a lot less to do with something you're doing and more to do with luck. And so that's where I get a little nervous about anointing this Lakers team as a four-star tier title contender is I just want to make sure that when Amen Thompson and the rest of the Rockets can't hit a shot from downtown, we're not over indexing just the make or miss side of the 3-point line there. So yeah, I could go through the game log of the Lakers opponents and how cold they've been from downtown. But that stat right there kind of tells you is that their 3-point defense, field goal percentage defense is the best in the month of March. But as we see, those things fluctuate a lot more than what our soul wants it to be. And so, yeah, I think that if the Lakers are just like a, you know, Dan, like, I don't think they need to be top 10. I think if they can be in that like 12, 13 range, like in there, I think they can make a deep run because the offense can be that outrageous sometimes. So I think that with LeBron and Luka and Austin Reeves, if they can be of a slightly above average defense, that's where I want them to be. I don't need them to be top five because I just think offensively they can make up for that in ways that other teams simply can't. They got so many weapons offensively. And so if they can get kind of on the fringe of that top 10 defense, I think that's good enough for me to say they're going to make a deep playoff run.
And it's possible that that can happen even if the 3-point, you know, variance levels out somewhere in between third lowest and fifth highest, right? Like if it finishes somewhere in the middle, like you look at the other stuff, and I kind of blew my mind as I was looking at those tale of two seasons kind of things at the 40 game mark and then since the last 2 months. And like, they're not forcing turnovers at a different rate. They're not grabbing rebounds at a different rate. They're not allowing like a significantly lower or higher share of shots at the rim or from 3-point range. They're not the transition frequency allowed is about the same. Like all of the other things are about the same. How often they're sending you to the free throw line. It's like 37 to 33. That's the big swing. And so that's how you go from 26th in defensive efficiency to 10th. And so if it's in the middle, and yeah, maybe that's 15th, 14th, like, yeah, I feel like I've used this comp before. That's the Denver math, right? Or that's the Knicks math. That's the argument, the idea for how this works. Top one, top two, top three offense, 12th, 13th defense. That gets you, it keeps you in the fight in a postseason series. And maybe the Lakers can get there. And if you can get there and you've got that guy at the top of the food chain, you know, you can do some pretty dangerous things in the postseason. A third and final little number this week, and it's like a revisitation of something we've talked about a few different times in the past with a sunnier outlook on it. Third little number this week is 62. That is the number of points by which the Lakers have outscored their opponents with Luka, LeBron, and Austin Reeves on the floor over the past 2 months in this since January 18th sample that we've been talking about. Through the first half of the season, they'd only played 140 minutes together. They had like the staggered injuries, right? And in those 140 minutes, they got outscored by 24 points. Over the past 2 months, 246 minutes plus 62. And here's the part that's important. During this 9-1 run over the last 10 games, like you talked about, that's where the bulk of it has come. 148 minutes together for the big three there, plus 56 in those 148 minutes. And they're scoring about 121 points per 100 possessions in those minutes. So like best in the league caliber offensive efficiency with the big three on the court. This is what you were hoping for. This is what the goal was. They need to be an overwhelming offensive team with those three guys on the floor. And we're seeing that more now than we have to this point in the partnership. And a fun sub little number here, like you mentioned it earlier, I kind of want to just drill down a little bit in that same sample. LeBron James for the full season, 27.5% usage rate, 58.9% true shooting. Very good for anybody. Extraordinary for a 41-year-old, but just that's where we're at. 20, like all-star, superstar level usage, very good efficiency. In big 3 minutes through the full season, 22.4% usage, 64.3% true shooting. Usage goes down, efficiency goes up. Over these last 10 games, 20.1% usage, 73.2% true shooting. So now we're talking about LeBron having like, I don't know, like an Aaron Gordon-y level of usage and a, I don't know, Mitchell Robinson level of true shooting or whatever. Like he's converting his buckets like a screen and dive role man center in a complementary role playing off of the other two guys. And maybe just maybe what these three guys needed was more time on task together to figure out how the roles needed to work. And we're finally seeing it work that way. And we get like a superstar in his role, LeBron James, kind of tying those things together. This is an interesting version of the Lakers, I think, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, that's the really interesting stats there for LeBron in that big three. And again, clarifying the roles and understanding that. I remember having a conversation with Eric Spoelstra a few years ago after that 2011 Dallas series, where LeBron was just out of sorts, wasn't willing to attack in against J.J. Barea in the post, and it was just, he really was soul-searching, right? It's just very different to be having your back to the basket and setting screens and being a role man for a guy who's always had the game in front of them. Like, LeBron is always, up until that point, been able to see the floor, and it's kind of hard for us sitting on our couch thinking about this, but like, for LeBron, being the role man and turning your back to the ball and not having that viewpoint and almost looking through the rear view mirror when you're playing basketball, that's not been his normal modus operandi. That's been kind of something that he had to learn over time. And so this, where I've always said he's Karl Malone out there, the size of Karl Malone, but with a jetpack, right? And Sometimes you got to be able to set the screen and be able to be the role man. It's not his most natural position, but at 41 years old, I think this is kind of where he's at. And I think it's better for the Lakers that he understands that role and is able to deliver in that role. But I think also it's the people around them. Like, maybe, I don't know. I think the Marcus Smart piece of this is huge. I think Marcus Smart, having his veteran poise, whatever you want to call it, the championship like experience, all that stuff. I think we should spend a little more time talking about how Marcus Smart and his ability to disrupt things defensively. And he is a pest, and he is kind of this annoying defensive guy that I think every team needs to have that guy on the team. The Thunder have like four of those guys on their team.
Right.
Marcus Smart, when he's on the floor, the opponent turnover percentage is at its highest. Creates him being out there just creates a lot more chaos defensively, kind of what you need. Rui Hachimura is not that dude. Like, Rui, I think when they switched off of Rui and Gabe Vincent and gave those minutes to Marcus Smart is when a lot of that big three performance, the scoreboard stats, the plus minus, When you have Marcus Smart out there as the fourth guy or the wing guy instead of Rui and Gabe Vincent, I think you're seeing a lot more positive stints with Marcus Smart, because I think he's just more active, much more defensively a disruptor, and that really is what you need in that role. So Marcus Smart, when he's out on the floor, again, plus 12 every 100 possessions with the big three. Rui Hachimura minus 2 this season with Rui Hachimura next to the big three. So think about that. When you got LeBron, Austin Reeves, and Luka Doncic on the floor with Rui Hachimura, it's a 14-point swing from Rui to Marcus Smart. And so I think they figured out something there, and that's a big reason why you're seeing that turnaround.
And part of it too is just stylistic difference or role definition difference. Like, Rui Hachimura, those lineups are basically like three power forwards, right? With Luka and LeBron and Rui. And then, but like, Marcus Smart can be your point of attack defender. Now, he's not as good at that now as he was when he was, you know, a decade younger, but like, he does different things and does them at a super high level. And yeah, to your point, like, the best teams have these guys. There's the Carusos and the Cason Wallaces in Oklahoma City. There's Derek White in Boston, who, when that trade happened and he went from San Antonio to Boston, I was like, you know how much the Celtics love Marcus Smart? Well, now they have two. So now Marcus Smart is that guy on the other coast. And like, these teams, you know, they're everybody's looking for their version of that. You know, Jalen Suggs in Orlando, we've talked about so often. Like, these guys who are defensive maniacs, who are also like complementary playmakers, who are willing to play a smaller usage role and space the floor and can knock down a shot, but don't need to dominate the offense to do it. And so like that, you know, it's about having the pieces that fit together most harmoniously or synergistically. And while I guess harmony and synergy are not necessarily things you would associate with Marcus Smart over the course of his career, he does fit that way well with this construct. And it's just, to be speaking of fit, I know it's a little bit cute, but it just, as you're talking about this conversation you had with Spo back then, and the versions of LeBron teams we've seen over the years where it's Chris Bosh had to get comfortable with not being the number one guy, right? And he had to accept a smaller role that asked different things of him to get to where he wanted to go. Kevin Love famously was tweeted about to fit in, not fit out, and had to sublimate himself to a different structure. It took a long time, and it took having Luka Doncic join your team, but maybe that's where LeBron is right now. And maybe LeBron sees that in whatever way. I can't imagine it's easy for anybody to accept that when you've been at the level that hardly anybody in the history of the sport has been at. But you mentioned that kind of like dividing point of who gets the shot in the last minute? Where do we go from here? Like, maybe there is a stratification that has happened, and LeBron accepting that what this team needs most from me isn't the most of me. It's for me to do more of these other things as well, and to do them at a super high level, because guess what? He can. 20% usage, 73% true shooting, diving on the floor for loose balls, being that defensive communicator, that backline disruptor, somebody who can switch all over the place, who can be an active participant in a zone. Like, he can do all that stuff. So now that you're getting towards closer to the finish line of the regular season, you're getting towards the postseason, it would be interesting and cool to see like maximum force multiplier, rising tide that lifts all boats across the board, complimentary LeBron. It's a version of him we've never really seen, but it's interesting to see what that could be, what we see down the stretch here.
Yeah, man. I think when we talk about LeBron diving across the floor and doing the little things that we never imagined that we would see that kind of LeBron, is just like role player LeBron. It's pretty cool. I mean, it's pretty cool to see. And the fact that he's still willing to do that stuff. And we talk about Marcus Smart and his ability to be out on the floor and what that does for them. I don't know whether that's inspiring to have Marcus Smart out there, that LeBron is now willing to go like Dennis Rodman and go completely horizontal to go get that ball. But I'll remind folks, according to Sport Radar, since February 20th, so in the last month, guess which duo has the most steals in the NBA? The answer is Luka Doncic and Marcus Smart. So which duo in the NBA has the most steals? It is that guy, Marcus Smart, and the other one, Luka Doncic, who we all ridiculed for not playing defense, not running back, and just being so heavily skewed on the offensive end. We all got some teeth, new veneers because of that. So, yeah. Dan, speaking of LeBron and enjoying this new role, the Las Vegas team and the Seattle Supersonics team might be becoming a reality with expansion on the horizon, it looks like. We're going to talk about this and go deeper on expansion with the new report from ESPN that the Board of Governors are going to hold a vote here momentarily about expanding to 32 teams. So we're going to talk more about that right after the break. All right, Dan, the big number this week is 37.8, not 32, but I could have made it 32 because that is the number of teams that the NBA might have in a couple years, with Las Vegas and Seattle being the expansion markets that the NBA is eyeing for a vote here. They will hold a vote with meetings next week to explore, according to Shams Charania, adding expansion teams exclusively in Vegas and Seattle. So, Dan, apologies to Louisville, Nashville, was Kansas City, St. Louis.
Kansas City, right? Vancouver.
Vancouver, Montreal, Mexico City. It looks like we're given the Sonics back, which is awesome. Although they haven't specified that the Sonics would be back officially, but we can all, it's a fair bet that that the Supersonics are going to be back, which is great. And Vegas gets a team, which LeBron has voiced his desire to be part of an ownership group. And I believe he said on the record that he wants to have a team in Vegas. So maybe he's going to be a part of that, maybe not. But we've already reached the point in LeBron's career, Dan, that he's shooting golf commercials. So I kind of feel like the end is near for LeBron the player and LeBron the owner golfer. He's transitioning into that next phase of his life and career. So they're targeting the 2028-29 season. And of course, those are two very westerly teams. And so the question becomes, which team in the Western Conference moves over to the East? And I think, Dan, we've all played around the idea of like, does New Orleans make more sense or Memphis makes more sense? But I kind of love the idea of the Minnesota Timberwolves moving to the Eastern Conference for a couple of reasons. They're kind of clustered there with Chicago and Milwaukee up there in that corridor there and Detroit. So it wouldn't be much of a geographical shift for them. But I think in terms of the storylines of the NBA, having Anthony Edwards in the East and then Luka in the West and Wemby in the West, I feel like the East is kind of starving for some of those big time personalities. And I love the idea of Anthony Edwards in the Eastern Conference because I don't know. I want to see more of him in the Eastern Conference playoffs. And that would be super fun. Not to take anything away from New Orleans and Memphis, but I feel like Ant in the East, I'm excited about that. If there's anything that I'm excited about in this expansion story, it's the possibility that Ant is now an Eastern Conference team. As much as there is kind of like a blurring of the lines of conference realignment and stuff, I think that's really fun. What say you?
Yeah, the idea, especially like just getting another marquee mega star kind of player that's in the Eastern time zone that would be on, you know, 7 p.m. primetime games. Like, I think from a league perspective, that would be pretty exciting, pretty enticing. You know, adding a team that has been a Western Conference finalist 2 years running and has been consistently competitive now for a handful of years, putting them in position to be in an East that obviously right now has some pretty strong teams up at the top, but perennially the balance has been a little bit West heavy for decades, I think, at this point. Like, that from a balance of power position, that I think makes some sense. And just, I think, even like, we talk so much about the travel that players deal with, right? You know, as we talk about trying to keep players healthier, get more stars on the court, like Minnesota being so tightly, as you mentioned, so tightly clustered with Detroit, with Chicago, with Milwaukee, you know, that kind of, if you're trying to like loop out four team divisions, that to me makes more sense than saying, even though, like, technically speaking, from a longitude and latitude perspective, New Orleans and Memphis might be further east. Like, you could still bucket those teams a little bit more easily with, you know, like the Texas teams or what have you. Like, there's a little bit that makes some more sense to me. And then if you're trying to reduce travel, you're trying to reduce the number of back and forth that these teams got to go. I think there's something to be said logistically for that from a Minnesota perspective too. But like, listen, you talk about what's exciting about this, like at the risk of being the simple person on this podcast, although I'm quite good at it, the idea of Seattle getting a team back after nearly 20 years without one, or I guess at that point would be 20 years and if it comes back for the 2028 season, like the loss of the Supersonics, the theft of the Supersonics, let's be perfectly honest, has been a persistent scar on the league for two decades. And that was a market that was a proud market with great history, generations of wonderful players that had just gotten Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook and was in a position to potentially have a renaissance at that point. And then that was taken away from those fans through no fault of the market or their own. It's not like they didn't come out and support it. It's not like there wasn't something there to build on. Now you're in a position where that wrong can be righted. And I think that's a pretty exciting thing for everybody. I will be perfectly honest. Let's go put a team in Vegas at a time where we've got multiple federal investigations going on about gambling. Like, feel the optics of that feel gnarly to me, but yeah, I'm not the one making those decisions. And the I feel like I've lost that battle many times over. So I think the ripple effects and ramifications moving outward of, all right, what does that mean for basketball related income? What does that mean for, like, does the idea of getting whatever that is, like potentially $15 billion, $20 billion in expansion fees for the existing crop of owners, does that make it more likely that some markets are going to go on the market again? Like some franchises might, some owners might say, like, all right, we got the windfall, let's cash out. What does that mean? And you know, the league as it's structured, expansion draft, you can only protect eight guys on each team. Who's available? Who gets left unprotected in a draft like that? What kind of, you know, we've seen in other sports, like I believe it was the Golden Knights in the NHL when the NHL expanded to Vegas, they were able to draft and put together a pretty competitive team pretty quickly. Like, we've never seen that really in the history of the recent history of expansion in the NBA. Is it possible that there could be an expedited version of a team getting up on its feet and actually building something reasonable pretty quickly? Like, all that's pretty interesting to me. And there's going to be, I think, obviously, we're not there yet. We are at, like, they are going to have a meeting to confirm that they want to go ahead with it. However, I think the argument that folks have made, which was like Adam Silver wouldn't announce this if he didn't feel pretty confident he had at least 23 votes, that makes some sense to me. So, you know, and then once that happens, I think we might be seeing this thing get fast-tracked and be on the path to seeing two new teams in the NBA going to 32.
Yeah, I'm thrilled for Seattle fans. As someone who's got Kevin Calabro on the broadcast, who did a lot of Sonics games.
Sure.
And is got a lot of Seattle roots. It just feels like there's so much fandom and all the stories that he tells about, you know, covering the Sonics over the years. It feels like to me that it's one of the wrongs that David Stern had that Adam Silver can right. And there's not many opportunities for Adam Silver to kind of fix those things from the previous regime, but I do think that's one of them. And so that'd be a cool thing for the NBA to get the Sonics back. I mean, talk about growing up in the 90s and Sean Kemp and Gary Payton, GP2, yeah. GP and the glove and Sean Kemp, and how much of a cultural influence they had and going against the Bulls in the NBA finals. And it just feels like so much history that we need back in the league. And the fact that KD, I don't know, man. It's going to be all of the feels when that first Sonics game hits. And I'm not so sure I'm going to feel the same way about the Vegas thing. Not to sour on it, but are you really going to convert all those Lakers fans into Vegas fans? I just don't see it. Like, we talk about the Vegas fan base and how they come out for the Golden Knights and for the Aces. But like, most of the NBA fans there are Lakers fans. And it's harder to convert the Lakers fans when, like, think about it. You're in Brooklyn, right? It was a little easier to get Brooklyn to get behind an NBA team because the Knicks were just so bad for so long, right? There were some fans who were just like, yeah, I need something new. I don't feel like Vegas is going to be swayed by being like, you know what? Yeah, that Luka Doncic guy, I'm not riding that train over there in the Laker lane. I'm going to convert to this Vegas team. So I'm a little worried about the close proximity to LA and how many like Vegas fans are going to say goodbye to the Lakers and embrace this Vegas team. And as we've seen over the last few years, the Vegas tourist market has kind of plummeted. And so I feel like a lot of people used to decide, hey, let's go to like a bunch of Vegas games this year. That idea isn't as appetizing when everyone has a casino in their pocket. You know, I just feel like the Vegas thing would have been awesome 15 years ago in terms of how to get excitement over a Vegas team. But with the gambling worries and the integrity of the game concerns, this I feel like in a weird way, the NBA is late to Vegas. They've got Summer League in Vegas, mm-hmm. which has always been great. But doesn't it kind of feel late to the ball game? And they have the Major League Baseball. They're going to have a baseball team there. They've got the NHL squad, the NFL, and the WNBA team. And now the NBA is coming into an already established market where it's different with Seattle. Seattle, they had already had the Sonics and the base there. Now the NBA is coming into a party that's already going and hoping to get people to go to their party.
Yeah, that's – and it's not the – you're used to the NBA feeling, or at least in a business perspective, being like a little bit more first movery as opposed to reactive in this way. And I guess maybe the argument is, yeah, like Summer League is kind of what established the beachhead there for everybody else to kind of jump in on. But yeah, then are you not going to reap the benefits there? Your point of comparison about the Nets in Brooklyn, though, like I think the challenge, the Nets are still, they're not close. And obviously now it's different. Like the Knicks have been consistently good, but the Nets have never made that real major inroad in terms of brand loyalty or stare. Like, it's a little more clippery than anything else. And so, like, I think the job one, if you are running the theoretical Las Vegas basketball team, is like, don't be whack for a decade And like that probably helps get more people on board, as opposed to being like, oh yeah, no, we just sort of transplanted a garbage fire from one place to another. And like, that doesn't really get anybody super excited about it. But I think the one sort of concern I've heard raised, and that I think is interesting to at least think about, I don't have a great answer for it, is we are at a point, and you've talked about it and written about this at length and very well, like a third of the NBA isn't trying to win now and hasn't been since before February, early February, before the All-Star break. And now we're going to add more teams. And unless we're expanding the playoffs, which we've already expanded postseason play to 20 teams, that means more lottery teams, right? More teams that will need picks. And you're adding to that, like, I know lottery the expansion rules would stipulate like certain restrictions on the level of pick that a lottery team can get or that an expansion team can get. You can't just walk right in to the number one pick, yada, yada, yada. But still, at a time where, you know, you mentioned Adam Silver, like trying to right the wrongs of the past, there are a number of wrongs of the present that the commissioner of the NBA is having a difficult time getting his arms around and wrangling to the ground. And so adding more teams, it's the only thing that matters here, is that it would be $667 million windfall for every ownership group that doesn't have to get whacked up among the players and BRI. I think that's maybe one thing to keep in mind here. The expansion fees don't get shared with everybody, as far as I understand it. And so,
yep,
but like right. the idea of, the concern about dilution, I guess, like, I think about it and I'm like, there's more than 450 dudes who are NBA caliber players, right? I think if there are 30 more jobs or 60, whatever, 30 more jobs, two more rosters, there are 30 more players in the world that can fill those 30 NBA jobs, whether it's from the G League or players that are overseas or going to, you know, more draftees coming in, et cetera, et cetera. That I'm not so worried about. But the idea of like more teams that can't compete on a nightly basis, I think that's an interesting thing. Now, maybe that's just concern trolling from folks that don't want to see new things happen, but I think it's interesting. And I don't think it's totally something to dismiss out of hand.
No, you're right. You're right. And I don't think it's a concern of mine that there's enough talent. It's just when talent is already missing one out of every three games, that's just going to exponentially get worse as we add more teams, and then there's fewer stars to go around. And now if every star is missing one out of three now, what is that going to look like in 5 years when these two new teams are going? You know, is it going to be one out of every two? Are stars going to even play 50% of the games in 3, 4, 5 years down the road when you're diluting the talent pool even further? So, man, it's a whole nother podcast, but we'll probably hit this later when this becomes even more official. But kind of hope they knock down the number of games, and therefore we can actually see more of the stars in a larger percentage of these games. If there are going to be two more teams, maybe we use that windfall of all those, that money. Maybe we decide, hey, maybe now we can actually take some risk and make the longer term a priority and cutting down the number of games in order to have a healthier season and have more impact on a night-to-night basis, space out the games, get rid of back-to-backs, and have storylines that can breathe for like more than 6 hours in the NBA because there's not games and back-to-backs. We're having, speaking with a full circle, we got Lakers-Houston in a 3-4 battle in the Western Conference. And then we got Bam Adebayo and Luka on the very next night. And we don't even know if they're going to be playing in those games because there's so much congestion in the schedule. And I would hate to keep doing this over the next 3, 4, 10 years to continue to have to caveat things if this guy's healthy, if they're going to play in the second night of a back-to-back. But the reality is we have to kind of put that there. When the Lakers are playing a back-to-back against Miami on Thursday night, we have to say if those guys are playing on the second ever back-to-back. We hope that with expansion, maybe we can knock those down. But that's for another day.
Oh, Tom, we'll Tom, you sweet summer child. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I hope for things too. I mean, as long as we're wishing for stuff, you know, a pony would be nice, but I'm not so sure.
Well, we've got, you know, not a pony, but talk about horsepower in some of these cars that Luka Doncic has that he pulls up to the arena in. See that Segway on the way out? How about that?
Beautiful. 37 professional broadcaster. 8.
Let's see. Yeah, we'll see what happens tonight. Whether he gets 37 or 38, because the big number was that on Wednesday. Thanks, everybody behind the scenes, especially Brad, Emmy, Sarah, Ryan, for making this show a reality. Thank you so much. Definitely subscribe to that Yahoo NBA YouTube channel. Also, fill out those brackets. If you're watching this before the tournament kicks off, go to Yahoo Sports and fill out your brackets and make sure you give us a 5-star review wherever you listen to this show. And as Bomani says, if you do not give us 5 stars, I am going to be inclined to call you a hater. Don't be on that list. We want you on the nice list. Be back next week with another episode of The Big Number every Wednesday here at Yahoo Sports. Thanks so much, Dan, and we'll talk next week.